The Illusion of Choice, A Life Lived on Autopilot, Chapter 3, The Confrontation with Management, Who's Really in Control? The room was cold and sterile, the kind of place where decisions were made that had nothing to do with the people they affected. The sounds of clicking of pens and the faint hum of air conditioning fills the air. Scott and Alejandra sat across from the corporate sponsor for the robotics laboratory, a man with too much confidence and too little concern for the bigger picture. He smiled at the two of them, but it didn't reach his eyes. There was something behind that smile, something Scott couldn't quite put his finger on.
You've done some impressive work, both of you.
But you must understand that what we're doing here and what you're contributing to is bigger than any one project. There are systems in place, patterns that go far beyond your lab. And Alejandra, leaning forward, asked,
So what are you saying?
And the corporate sponsor said calmly,
What I'm saying is you're part of something much larger, and it's not just about artificial intelligence. It's about control. Yes, control. Shaping human behavior on a scale you can't even imagine.
A low, growing hum begins, hinting at something hidden beneath his words. And Scott wasn't ready to let the conversation go just yet. And leaning forward, he asked, So what do you mean shaping behavior? We're freelancers. We didn't sign up for any kind of mind control program. And the corporate sponsor, smiling, his voice smooth, said,
You're part of something much larger. And it's not just about technology anymore. It's about the future of the human race. The question is, how far are you willing to go?
And Scott, shaking his head, said, We're not interested in anything beyond tech development. And the corporate sponsor looked at him, his voice darkening slightly.
Well, understand this. I'm the nice guy, the face of this organization, the one on the magazine covers, the one who writes big checks to charity, the one who funds these types of projects. But there is a much darker force behind this too, Scott. And trust me, you don't want to meet them. You're already in deep, and you've already made some realizations and moves that we've noted. So I'd suggest you think twice before continuing what you're doing, or before walking away.
The distant sound of a clock ticking, each second marked as if time slipping away, the meeting ends abruptly. Scott and Alejandra, suddenly dismissed by the corporate sponsor, anxious to get some privacy to report on the meeting to his higher-ups. We needed a break, a place to think, a place away from the lab and the surveillance that we suspected was hanging over us. If we'd begun to become wise to the game of what they were doing, then they were watching us, or listening to us, or both. And the Museum of History felt like a safe place, a public place, a place where we could rely on the past to remind us of what was at stake. Alejandra led me to the Greek exhibit of the ancient world, and it didn't take long for me to see what she was trying to show me. Their footsteps slow as they approach a large, detailed exhibit on the ancient Greek world. There is a distant murmur of a tour guide's voice explaining something about Socratic dialogues. His voice echoes throughout the museum hall. As in the background, there is the faint murmur of tourists as well as the footsteps of others on polished floors. And Alejandra quietly says to Scott, "Look at this. Thousands of years ago, the Greeks were wrestling with the same questions we are now. What is free will, and what is the purpose of life if we're controlled by forces beyond us? But they fought for autonomy, for the power of the human mind." The two walk up to a display of Socrates, his likeness etched in stone. The voices of tour guides drift in the background, speaking of democracy and the birth of Western thought. And Scott says thoughtfully, "Well, these ancient Greeks believed in the greatness of the human spirit, that intellect, logic, and reason could guide us, but is that still true? If what we're facing, what the corporate sponsor hinted at, is real, then are we even capable of having autonomy anymore?" And Alejandra nodded, looking at the exhibits. "Well, look how much we've built on their foundation. They influenced our very country. The Declaration of Independence, the idea that men are created equal, all of them endowed with certain rights by the Creator, says it right here. Even if it wasn't perfect, and even if the men who wrote the document were far from perfect, it still reflects the Greek ideals, and the Greeks believed in human potential, and so did the people who apparently founded our country." There is the faint whispers of tourists admiring a replica of Independence Hall and from Philadelphia in a nearby exhibit. The echo of a tour guide mentions that the founding principles were from 1776. And Scott, gazing at the replica of the hall, says, "Well, they even thought that freedom and autonomy were sacred. But what if we're just programmed? What if this idea of free will is an illusion? Then it all comes back to control, doesn't it?" And Alejandra says with intensity, "Well, that's exactly what we're fighting against. The corporate sponsor and whoever is behind him, they're trying to erase what makes us human. But look around you, Scott. They can't take that away, no matter how hard they try." She gestures toward a statue of Socrates. "This is proof that we've been fighting for freedom for thousands of years, and if we give in now, we're just undoing everything that came before us." And Scott said, frustrated, "Well, what if we're wrong? What if everything we're doing, every thought we have, is already part of that code? Maybe that code even existed at the time of Socrates. He wasn't asking any great questions. The code was. So are we even alive? Was Socrates even alive? Were there even any Socratic dialogues? Should they be called dialogues of the code or something? Are we anything more than machines, Alejandra?" And Alejandra stood firm. "Look at them, Scott. Socrates, Aristotle, Plato. They didn't know the answers, but they kept asking the right questions. That's what made them great. And maybe we don't know if we're programmed or if they were. But as long as we keep questioning, as long as we're still alive, that's what makes us human." And Scott, looking at Alejandra, said, "And what if we find out we're not in control, if we're just following a script?" And the lady said, "Well, then we fight anyway. We don't have to accept it. They want control over us, over everyone. But maybe that's all the more reason to resist. The Greeks, the ancient Greeks, fought for human intellect and spirit, and we can fight for the same." As we left the museum, the weight of history hung heavy over us, and the corporate sponsors had warned us about control, but now I saw control in a new light. Alejandra and I weren't just fighting for ourselves anymore. We were fighting for something far bigger, something that had started long before us, and maybe, just maybe, we could finish that fight. After the meeting with the corporate sponsor, and after going to the museum, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being followed. Something wasn't adding up. It felt like a presence hovering over us, watching every move we made. I could feel it in the air. This wasn't just paranoia. We were being tracked. Was the corporate sponsor behind it, or perhaps something higher than him? I think it started right after we left the museum. And Alejandra, startled, said, "Followed? Well, how do you know? And Scott said urgently, the glitches in the system, the reset cycles, they've been tampering with our data. The sponsor knows too much about us, our conversations, what we're thinking about. We're part of something far bigger than we think, and they're watching us, every step, every decision. And Alejandra, her eyes narrowing, said, well, then we need to stay ahead. If they're watching us, we're not just pawns. We can still fight back. We didn't have much time. The sponsor's warning hung over us, and I knew we couldn't trust anyone but ourselves, but I wasn't going to let them get the upper hand. I had a plan too, and I hoped that Scott was on board with that plan. Alejandra pulls out her phone. The soft click of the device activating is heard, and she says quietly, Scott, remember that quantum device we built for fun, that scientist guy on TV told us about, Quantum Quinn? The one we joked about using as a flashlight. And Scott confuses, you mean that the quartz lamp? What are you thinking about? And Alejandra smirked, I rigged it to emit a light so bright it'll temporarily blind anyone within range. If they're after us, we can use it to get away, disorient them just long enough to disappear. There is a faint whir as the device charges, and then footsteps grow louder behind them. And Scott says nervously, well, we better hope this thing works. And Alejandra says with confidence, oh, it'll work. When I give the signal, just be sure to cover your eyes. The device clicks on, and a sharp burst of light fills the scene. Footsteps scatter, shouts are heard in the distance. And Alejandra, grabbing Scott's arm, says, run, now! Alejandra's brilliance bought us some time, and it also sent the lackeys of the corporate sponsor probably to an eye doctor or to the hospital. We instead decided to take a day for ourselves. I called a pastor that I knew. We spoke from time to time, and we agreed to meet near the ocean to talk. I wasn't looking for peace. I was looking for answers. Alejandra and I were in too deep, and I needed to talk to someone I trusted. The pastor and I hadn't always agreed on everything, but the one thing I knew is that he cared, and right now I needed someone who believed in something bigger than what I was seeing. The wind picked up slightly, the waves crashing in the distance as Scott walks along with Pastor John. Scott sighs and says, have you ever thought, Pastor, about what it means if we're not in control of our consciousness, if what we think is just code, whether it's people's code or artificial intelligence? If we're following a predestined script and make no decisions, well, does that make us any less alive and perhaps less sacred to God? And the pastor says thoughtfully, well, you're asking if life is sacred, if it's predetermined. If we're no more than machines, are we still capable of meaning, of choice? And Scott nods, exactly. There's this project at work, and let's just call it high tech. It's about control, a corporate sponsor. He says they're shaping behavior, programming people. If it's true, Pastor, what's left of free will? A gull cries overhead. The pastor pauses, looking out over the ocean. And he says calmly, I think you're trying to wrestle with the same questions that humans have asked since the beginning of time. If we're created, are we free, or are we just following the path laid out for us by a higher power, whether that power is God or some program? And Scott asks, so what's the point of morality then? How do we know if we're actually choosing anything? And the pastor smiles gently. You know the ocean is there. It's like a metaphor for creation itself. It's vast and unpredictable, but even though the tides follow a pattern, we wouldn't say the ocean isn't alive, would we? It's part of something much bigger, just like we are. Scott pressed him. So you're saying that even if we're coded, we're still alive? That there's still sanctity in our lives? And the pastor nodded. Exactly. Look, Scott, we're predestined by God, programmed by a machine, or navigating life with free will. Regardless of what it is, it doesn't change the fact that we're here. And that we're part of something greater than ourselves, something far greater. And to me, that makes life sacred. Even if AI, if it ever becomes capable of love, compassion, or choice, wouldn't we owe it the same respect? I mean, it might not be the same as human life, granted, but if it reflects the divine, in some way it's worthy of protection. And Scott says, but what about sin? If we're all programmed, how can we be held accountable for anything? How do you justify heaven and hell if we're just all following a script? And the pastor sighed. That's the part we can't really understand, Scott. Even the Bible admits there are mysteries too great for us to understand. But faith isn't about having every answer. It's about trusting that there's a purpose and that there's always something higher than our ability to comprehend. God's ways are higher than ours. That's what they say in the book of Job, even when they don't make sense. The pastor's words hung heavy in the air like the clouds gathering on the horizon. Part of me wanted to believe him, to trust that even if we were programmed, there was still something sacred in that. But the other part, the part that had seen the darkness behind this corporate mask, it couldn't shake the feeling that we were more trapped than we realized. Scott's only response was, I don't know if I can believe in all of that, Pastor, but I'll keep looking for the answers. And the pastor said gently, that's all that anyone can do. There's a distant clap of thunder as they continue walking, the scene fading into the sound of the crashing waves of the ocean.